Go.
Hello, everybody, and welcome to another edition of the Dynasty Dudes Hangout with my friend Russell Clay and our special guest and the reason for our first ever IDP talk, Mr. Eric Breeze from DynastyLeagueFootball.com.
Yeah, no, this is a pretty interesting addition because this is the first time sort of in the dudes era that we have a topic at hand that we're not really like we joke around and like say we don't know anything most of the time, but we do know our stuff in most formats, you know? And this is one that's pretty new to us. So we're excited to have Eric. We're gonna grill him with questions and hopefully he'll make it through.
Well, thanks for having me, guys. I'm looking forward to it.
Absolutely.
Okay. All right. So before we get into the IDP talk, we'll just talk some general news and notes. The first one of the day. Everyone loves the midterms, where they make someone sound like the next Jesus. Well, apparently the Packers have called Ty Montgomery a bigger Randall Cobb. So I know a lot of people were suspicious of their late third round selection of Ty Montgomery when they already have Jordy Nelson, Randall Cobb, and Davante Adams, and Jared Aberderis, and Jeff Janis. Pretty much everyone and their mother they have at wide receiver. And now they added Ty Montgomery in the late third round, who they say is a bigger Randall Cobb. Thoughts on this blurb, fellas?
Well, I was the one that wanted to talk about it, so I'll go first. Pretty much, it kind of makes sense to me. I personally don't think Ty Montgomery is a bigger Randall Cobb, but based on where they drafted him and sort of the type of player he is, I could see this as sort of Randall Cobb insurance. And if he were to go down, I don't think they'd have anyone other than him to sort of do those Randall Cobb-y things, you know, in both the return game and offensively. Do I think he'll ever amount to anything fantasy-wise like that? No. But I do think they just want him there for some type of insurance so that they're not just nothing in that area of the field without Cobb, you know?
Do you want the IDP guy to talk about it a little bit?
Yes.
Yeah, no.
Wow.
This is a first for me. Usually people don't listen to me when we talk offense. So a couple things about Ty Montgomery. He was really banged up last year in college, and his stock drastically fell. So for the Packers to take him in the third round, they really didn't want to lose out on him. They made an effort to make sure no one sniped him. So I do agree that he fits the Cobb mold better. On the outside, you have Jordy, and you have the best player in the universe, Jeff Janis. And then you have Davante Adams that play the outside. I think he can dabble in the slot, but I do agree that he is Cobb insurance, but at the same time, it's very expensive Cobb insurance. And I think right off the bat, they'll probably have him take over the return game just because Randall Cobb is a special player and he has been dinged up. The one time that he got hit in the knee, that was anybody would get hurt. But returns in general are a play that get a lot of players hurt. And I think that's probably where Montgomery's going to go to start. And if he flashes, I don't think Davante Adams has shown enough to really lock in that third receiver role. So I think it's going to be a fight between Montgomery, Janis, and Ty Montgomery from here on out.
I think for the people that drafted Devontae and Moncrief early on in the offseason, I think you're hurting right now. But at this point, I actually kind of feel like they're becoming values. Like they're dropping fast. I don't know exactly what the ADP is. I'm sure Ryan will tweet it out or has tweeted it out. But I could see by mid-season those guys being really good players to go after. Because you can just see it now, like they're on the decline big time. And I don't know. I guess he hasn't done anything to be worth that fourth and fifth round pick he was earlier this offseason, but I still think he's a value. Like, I think he's a talented young player. What do you think, Nathan?
With Adams, yeah, no. It's interesting because I definitely value the fact that the Packers have invested all this capital at wide receiver even after drafting Adams. After Adams, they drafted Arbidaris, they drafted Janis, they re-signed Cobb, and drafted Ty Montgomery. Now, maybe that's just the Packers drafted a bunch of receivers, not an indictment on Adams. But if they truly thought, oh, Adams can be a number one or even a number two guy, they wouldn't need to be drafting all these receivers unless they're just, okay, this guy's this role, this guy's this role, this guy's a long shot metrics guy, this guy is a nice third down receiver in Arbidaris or whatever. So while they don't play the same role, I think that this is a bit of saying, okay, yeah, we like Adams, but he's never going to be our like premier target type thing, I guess.
Do we still believe that he's the third receiver for that team this year, though?
Adams? Yeah. I mean, because I don't really see Janis, Arbidaris, or Montgomery being advanced enough to beat him out on offense. Now, I guess, and obviously, and Adams did some punt returns last year, I believe also.
So if Adams is the third receiver for the Packers this year, that's usually a pretty lucrative spot, correct?
I would say sorry about that.
No, go ahead, Brisco. Go ahead.
I was going to say, I would definitely say so, because they did draft Richard Rodgers last year, but they really don't have a dominant pass-catching tight end. So, and Lacy does catch well out of the backfield, but they didn't add a dynamic Johnson or anything like that. So Rodgers is going to throw for 4,500 yards. So yeah, you can easily make three guys fantasy relevant every week, starting relevant. So right. If whoever gets that spot, I want him. I've just never been sold on Devontae Adams, and mm-hmm. what they've done has just kind of reassured me that I don't think they're sold on him either.
And I don't think it's wrong to not be in on him. I just think his situation, plus him being overdrafted and people starting to panic, I think if he gets eight or nine touchdowns this year and like 700 yards, that's pretty good for like a 23-year-old guy. And that's sort of what that wide receiver three in Green Bay has been. So, man, I guess I'm going in hard on Devontae Adams right now, but I don't know. That's just how I see his situation working out, you know?
Yeah, it's definitely a possibility. I think he definitely has some nice upside this year. We'll just see how that passing game works out. Right. And anyway, I mean, there's always a chance they can become run heavy with Eddie Lacy or whatever. Right. But let's move on to the Miami running backs you wanted to talk about. I feel like we've talked about J.J. a ton on this, but we haven't really talked much about the correlation between the drafting of J.J. and the impact on Lamar Miller, who was right. the top 12 fantasy running back last year. I don't know. It's one of those things where ever since the whole knee thing came out, it's been okay. I'll see it when I believe it. I'll see it when I believe it when it comes to J.J. taking Lamar Miller's job. I like J.J. I love the talent before the injury, but and I even picked him up at like 302 of a rookie draft, which I thought that was really nice value. Mm-hmm. But that's about like where I take him, you know, just because there's still the risk of okay that with the knee he never does anything.
Right. And the more important piece here is Lamar Miller and what's going to happen with him. Because obviously he was fantastic in Miami last year. I see him as a great head of a committee guy, sort of what Jeremy Hill's production was last year. That's the most carries I want to see Lamar Miller get, and basically what his role was last year. So I think Ajayi could be a good thing, but does this mean they might let Lamar Miller walk next year? In which case, I doubt he's going to find a feature role, you know, or a head of a committee role. That's going to be tough to get. So,
any thoughts on that, Breeze?
Well, I was running around my house taking care of my daughter, but I heard most of it. But I think Lamar Miller is the perfect player in fantasy because people discount him for not being a feature back, but how many feature backs are there?
Right.
And it's something where as fantasy players you say, oh, they have a committee, this is terrible. But look at it from an NFL team standpoint. You need at least two solid running backs, because if one of them gets hurt, you're looking at what the Steelers had at the end of the year last year when they're going into the playoffs.
Yeah. With,
I was talking about it on Voxer the other day, and I couldn't even name the running back on their team. I was like, Dre Archer and some dude, because I didn't know. And so we're to the point where a guy that's going to get 200 carries and 30 to 40 receptions, that's a very solid RB2. Mm-hmm. So people are kind of scared. There's two groups of people with this Ayaji thing. There's the people that think he landed in a great spot and he's going to take over this backfield and he's now a great value in rookie drafts. And then there's the people like me that think you're only investing in this player at a cheap contract for 4 years, a rookie contract. And in a running back, for a running back, you aren't really expecting much more than 4 years out of a running back in general getting hit 300 times a year. Mm-hmm. So the fact that no NFL team wanted to take a small risk on Ayaji till the fifth round tells me that this knee injury is a concern, and it should not be just totally overlooked. So in general, just in conclusion, I'm buying Lamar Miller shares if people are dropping him out of the first round rookie pick value, because I would love him as my RB2.
Now, the bigger thing in this is Lamar Miller's next year value. Because that's where I'm worried. I'm not worried about this year. I think he's actually a great value in redraft. I'm just worried sort of he gets the leg sweeped out from under him next year, and then he's sort of just this on an island type player that doesn't have much value anymore, you know?
I agree. The one thing I think about more and more in Dynasty is what running back is safe next year? People thought Gio Bernard was safe and Jeremy Hill. People thought Trey Mason was safe and Todd Gurley. You really almost have to play Dynasty running backs as redraft. And it's more like looking at 1 to 2 year windows instead of 2 to 3, because and teams are and the nice thing is Miller has shown what he can do with 200 touches. So mm-hmm. if he does go somewhere else, he'll never be a feature back, I don't think, but he could easily be a solid RB2 for the next 3 years on a different team. And he's extremely young.
Yeah. No, I do like him as a talent and think he's a good player, but it'll just be interesting. I do have a little worry about next year, though. All right,
so let's talk some Falcons.
Yeah.
Falcons RBs. I don't know. Last year, I'm talking about the Falcons RBs right now, and last year I was a Freeman fan. I just thought, you know, good football player type thing. I never really saw him as like any sort of RB1 NFL or even RB1 fantasy potential, but I saw him as a guy who could be a nice scat back who can get you some PPR points. And I don't think that the Tevin Coleman drafting really destroys his value. We knew from the jump street that they were going to be drafting another back, because you're not going to give Freeman 20-25 carries a game. So he'll get his 10-11 carries, 4 or 5 targets. And I think that's enough for him to be fantasy relevant. And Coleman will get his 18 to 20 with some catches, and he'll be fantasy relevant as well.
That's the big value in sort of understanding the tactical parts of football in general. Not even necessarily fantasy-wise, but just understanding what players are and getting a range of why the teams are drafting them, you know? Because, like, as Nathan just said, I don't think they drafted Freeman to be a feature back ever, you know? Like, I think they wanted him and saw value in him and what he does well, you know, which is sort of being that third down-ish back. So I don't know that, like, he could work well with Coleman. That could be a good situation for both. And that's sort of, you go back to Gio and Hill, like, I just think that's a good situation for both sides. You know, it's not all about they're both fighting for the same role, because they're not, you know?
Yeah, I totally agree with you guys. So the one thing about Devontae Freeman is I think they drafted him because they knew Jaquizz Rodgers. They did not want to re-sign him. But he's very similar, maybe an upgraded version.
Yeah, and, upgraded version. I agree. With
and
that.
People get so fixated on, I want this running back that gets 30 touches. Those are extinct. You have Le'Veon Bell. You have Adrian Peterson. You have you have a handful. Not everyone gets one of those in fantasy.
Right.
So these guys, and I play all PPR as well. So Devontae Freeman in normal, yeah, I'm not really interested. But in PPR, I still don't love his talent, but I don't think we can deny that he could be in PPR a low RB2 for a team that's got good receivers and other positions that carry that team, because he should be able to get 3 to 4 catches a game, and Kyle Shanahan is just been amazing for running backs in fantasy, and Tevin Coleman, I'm mixed feelings about him. I know you love him. My concern is when you rely on a huge big play all the time, I think 10 years ago he would just light up the league. But the linebacker, I'm going to kind of go IDP mind here, the linebackers in the NFL have drastically changed. There are no more 250, 60-pound thumper linebackers that just destroy people. All linebackers are now running 4-6. I mean, they're athletic, so they're going to get to him. So he's going to have to either have a great line and just make people miss, or I don't see it. I think he's going to try to be that Chris Johnson, break the big plays, and I just don't know if he will. But I will admit that I've been a Coleman hater this whole time. But
that's an interesting thing to note. So you've noticed over the past 10 or so years that sort of linebackers have gotten more athletic, sort of like how wide receivers have gotten heavier.
Oh, definitely. I think it was Ray Lewis. From the beginning of his career to the end of his career, he was like a totally different physique. He was 20 pounds lighter. You didn't have...
Wow. Yeah.
I'm a Bears fan, so let's talk like Lance Briggs. The difference between Lance Briggs at weakside linebacker and Shaq Thompson, the rookie, are totally different. And the reason the linebackers have kind of evolved is 10 years ago, did we have these athletic wheel route and disco route running backs coming out of the backfield? Not as much. There was no Gio and my number one favorite player, Shane Vereen. There were not these guys 10 years ago. So the league has definitely evolved, and I think the linebackers have got more athletic, and I think Coleman might struggle unless he really is just that good at that one cut and go, or he just develops into a more all-around running back. And it is definitely possible, especially because he put up that production in that bad of an offense, and he also had a broken foot all year. So
right.
The book is definitely not closed on him, but I definitely think that if someone's going to give Devontae Freeman and PPR for free, I'll take him.
All right, so Nathan, what do you think about the 49ers running back situation?
Well, that's a good question, since I don't know the answer. I don't know. I think that Hyde's the leader in the clubhouse right now. And it depends on what Mike Davis's health is right now. I'm assuming that since they drafted him, they think that he'll contribute year one. I guess that's maybe a bit of a stretch with their draft history recently. Yes, they draft a lot of running backs, but not a lot of their rookie running backs have had year one impacts.
Right.
So, but also that's because Frank Gore was there. Frank Gore is no longer there. So now it's between two young guys. There's Carlos Hyde, Mike Davis, and Reggie Bush. And so I see Mike Davis, I think, like we talk about a lot with a lot of the pass catching running backs, I don't think that Reggie Bush has anything to do with Mike Davis or Carlos Hyde. I think those two will be stealing from each other, and Reggie Bush will get his based on how the offense is working.
Right, exactly. Hyde was another guy like those receivers I talked about earlier, where early in the offseason he was getting really overdrafted. But I think it's sort of figured itself out and found a place where I'm not totally against him now. I was pretty staunchly against him when people were taking him, like, what? How high were they going on him early on?
Like the 2-3 turn.
Yeah, and that was just really uncomfortable to me. But I do think he's a talented player. So I think if he gets 200 to 250 carries this year, he could be a really solid option. So that's an interesting guy for me now.
Okay, so my two cents on him. He's kind of an enigma in fantasy football. Last year, he was drafted. Everyone said, he's, you know, my number one rookie back. He landed in a great situation, but you have to wait it out a little bit because of Frank Gore. And I admit the situation has soured. Half their team retired. They have a coach that can barely speak English in interviews. And I don't really know what...
It's bad.
I don't really know what the Niners are doing. I don't even know if they know what they're doing. But yeah. It just confuses me that so many... It's on Twitter. It's everywhere. Not only people that are just fantasy football players, but the big guns are all souring so much on Carlos Hyde, and he didn't really do anything last year. He did not Bishop Sankey fall on his face.
Well, he didn't really get a chance. You know what I mean?
Exactly.
And I was not high on him coming out. I was not high on him last year or earlier in the offseason. But now this is where the rookies come in and sort of shift that ADP and make him a much more reasonable option now, you know?
Definitely, and I think the Mike Davis was a value pick, and if they do get 2013 Mike Davis, they got a steal, but I think getting that backfield, Carlos Hyde and Mike Davis, I don't count Reggie Bush, but getting that backfield for a decent price, I don't think it's a bad idea. A couple things I like. Carlos Hyde, he's a big boy, and he brings it. But he also has soft hands, and he can get out of the backfield.
Right.
Mm-hmm. He also, the other big thing is if the Niners want to be successful, they need to use Kaepernick's legs. And if they do some read option stuff, Carlos Hyde could get that Alfred Morris just wide open holes, because there's always a guy watching Kaepernick, because Kaepernick showed in championship week last year when he screwed me with a 90-yard touchdown run. He can do that. So is there risk in Hyde? Yes, but I am a Hyde believer. I watched him at Ohio State. He made some great plays. He's big. He can catch. And I really liked what I saw, and a lot of people are saying his yards per carry was so low. He was used primarily as a short yardage back, and Greg Roman's offense last year was just not creative. So if they do a couple things, I definitely think he could be an RB1. Will I draft him in a startup at like RB6, 7 range where he's going? I don't know about that, but I got him as like the eighth top skill player in my rookie draft last year that I do have him, and I'm happy with that, and I'm holding. And I'm just holding out hope that they didn't sour on him too much and they actually kind of know what they're doing out in San Francisco.
Right. And I have kind of railroaded this IDP edition of the Hangout because I put those topics in because I wanted to talk about them. But I think it's finally time. Let's talk some IDP, boys.
Okay.
I'm ready.
Okay, so let's start off with a wider angle lens. IDPs in rookie drafts, where do they fit in, and why aren't there IDPs that go in the first round of 12-teamers generally?
Okay, I actually wrote an article about this a couple months ago. Actually, it was 2 days before the draft. I wanted to get it out before the NFL draft. The thing about IDPs, I am I love playing IDP. I love having the best defense on my team, but I don't overvalue them. And when people look at my startups, they sometimes wonder, dude, you're an IDP guy. Why were your first eight picks offense? Well, there's a couple things about that. There will always be this supply for offensive skill players in rookie drafts, and there will always be at least six guys that people just fall in love with, regardless of how good the draft class is. So IDP players in general, they have a really capped ceiling in value. C.J. Mosley last year, he killed it. He was on the field every play. He racked up tackles. He's already a top five linebacker in Dynasty, in my rankings included. What is he worth right now? Maybe a late first. I'd say the best you could get is probably the 1.6, 1.7, and that's top value. Because there's those, you're always going to have a handful of running backs and wide receivers that people want bad, and they're not going to pay a defensive player. So, in all, I think that IDPs should go at the earliest, about the mid-second, and usually I don't even look at IDPs till the third. One of my strategies is if you really want to take an Eric Kendricks or a Fowler pre-ACL tear or something like that, shop that pick. There is going to be someone in your league that is in love with a rookie in the late first or early second, and they will pay you maybe a future first and a vet IDP that will produce good for you in the near term, or they might give you a player like C.J. Mosley. So instead of drafting Eric Kendricks and hoping he's Mosley, you just got Mosley for that pick. So I know that was a long explanation, but I'm going with, I would say mid to late second is when you can start considering it. And in the third round, I say go for it. But if you are in the mid to late second, I would say shop that pick to people and see if anyone sees an offensive player on the board that they want, because if they do, they will pay you more than that defensive player is going to net you in value.
Quick tangent on C.J. Mosley. Back last year, mid-season, when I was hanging by a thread on the Trent Richardson hype train, obviously I would watch every touch every week. And when the Colts played the Ravens, I saw C.J. Mosley. And sometimes when you're watching players, like, another player in the game stands out, and C.J. Mosley was incredible the entire game. And I was like, this guy's going to be a superstar. Like, he was just all over the place and made every tackle perfect. I mean, tackling Trent Richardson isn't hard, but just in general, like, he was just incredible the whole time. Is that sort of the general consensus on him now, that he's just a star, or?
I think it is. I get a little worried because Bama tends to beat up their players in college a little bit, mm-hmm. but I have him, I think, as my LB 4 or 5.
Yeah.
And he did too much last year to not give him credit for it. And he's in a great situation. They did lose Nada, but I don't know if that's going to affect him so much. The thing about Mosley is he's never leaving the field, so he's going to rack up stats. He's got the draft pedigree. He played well. Everything looks to him being a great player. So, speaking of rookie drafts, you took Mosley at, say, people were taking him in the late first last year. You took Mosley, you won a little bit. You gained a little value, but he really hit to do that. Some people took Ryan Shazier at that exact same point.
Yep.
And look at him in the preseason. He was all over the field. He had like 20 tackles. I know it's a preseason game, but he was all over the field, and people are going, this guy's going to be a stud. Well, you took him in the late first, and now he's worth less, and he's not even one of the biggest flops. Just a few years ago, we had Arthur Brown and Kevin Minter, who people are to the point now where if they haven't dropped him, they want to. It's going to hurt their pride too much. So that's why I'm saying with rookies in the third round, third rounds are just dart throws. pick whatever IDP you want. It's fine with me. But in that mid to late second, if you think about getting an IDP, just shop and pick, and it might boost your value. And that's the best. That's the way to make a good team in Dynasty is win lots of small trades in value. That's how I usually do it.
All right. So one thing I do want to talk about is sustainability, durability of these IDPs and their scoring points. So how long does like the average linebacker, the LB1, have in his career in Dynasty, or a D essentially just like go through the positions real quick and just say like what's like a range of the normal DE1, like top 10, you know what I mean?
So IDP's a weird thing. You can be really good at IDP, and you can be really bad at football because they're running into you. You're getting the tackles. Your team is struggling. If you're on the Jaguars or some team like that, so if
would Paul Posluszny fall into that range of things you're talking about?
Paul Posluszny is definitely not the best linebacker in the league. But he has definitely killed it in IDP.
Yeah.
But let's go with real stars. Luke Kuechly. He has been top 4 or 5 linebacker every year for 3 years. He's getting 150 tackles. He's just a stud, and I don't see that dropping off anytime soon. Thomas Davis right next to him he's had 3 knee surgeries, and he's still playing at 31 or 32 years old. So if you're a good player, you can easily last for 10 years. The big thing about IDP for sustainability of fantasy production is maybe think of snaps as like pass targets or rushing attempts. So you need snaps to get production for IDP. However, snaps don't automatically equal that. So you need both. You need to stay on the field, so you need to play good, and you need to actually show up in the box score. So maybe I'm not addressing the question exactly as you want, but the point is you need to be a good player. You need to be a linebacker that can play downs 1 and 2 against the run and stay on the field for third down. And for a lineman, you need to play the run well as rush the passer, because you need those snaps to be an effective IDP option, not some guy where you just coin flip and hope for a big play and get it 20% of the time.
Right. So this sort of leads into one of the questions I had, and I guess it's sort of about draft position and how a player being drafted high doesn't necessarily mean they're a good IDP play. And one of the guys that I picked in one of my rookie drafts was Vic Beasley. So for a lot of people that are just starting IDP, explain why an Eric Kendricks or the Anthony that went to the Saints would be a better pick than Vic Beasley.
Well, IDP is all about what you put up in the box score. So those off-ball, middle or weak side linebackers or inside linebackers in a 3-4, those guys that gobble up all the tackles, those are the ones that are going to put the big points on the board in pretty much any scoring format. There's kind of 3 types of scoring formats. You got your tackle-heavy, you got your balanced, and you got your sack-heavy. And really, the way you determine those is how many tackles do you need to equal the points of 1 sack? So,
right.
So I would say something around 3 tackles equal a sack is tackle heavy, 4 equal a sack is about balanced, and 5 plus is where you get into your big play, where you want those guys that take down the quarterback. So really, linebackers are just, they're the position that racks up the most stats. They always do. So I understand why Kendricks is the top, but linebacker is also the IDP wide receiver. It's super deep. You can find guys everywhere. And every team is going to have at least one linebacker that puts up points, because the tackles are something that has to happen. Unless you're playing a Tim Tebow team that throws it 30 times and completes 8 passes, I mean, there's going to be you're going to have tackles, and someone's going to eat them. So there's going to be linebackers. Linebackers are everywhere. It just matters on can you find those elite ones. As for Vic Beasley, to make you feel better, I personally think he's going to play Leo, which would be defensive end on the Falcons, and I think he's going to get that DL eligibility by week one. I don't think Quinn took a guy that he doesn't know how to use him. So I think you took him high. I think I just moved him up in my rankings after I had my rookie draft and really thought about it. And I'm sticking to he's going to play DN, and I think I have him as my fifth or sixth IDP rookie.
Eric, you don't have to say that to make me feel better. It's okay.
Well, I drafted him too, so I have to.
Okay. There you go. This is a personal thing, not about me.
I'm boosting his value for my own.
All right, Nathan, what's our next question here? Nathan here.
Oh. I don't know. So real quick too, I'm remembering your first question on why Hello? Some big guys aren't.
Can you hear me?
Yes.
So
Okay. Sorry, guys.
That are drafted high that aren't in IDP. It also matters on what position they play. You can draft a guy like Danny Shelton, who's a nose tackle, and he might be a great NFL player, but his purpose is to eat up two blocks and let other guys take down the ball carrier. So that's why you get to these leagues where there's guys that you're like, they're first round picks, they're top 15 picks, but are they? It's all about what they put in the box score. If you're a offensive player, if you're a good player, you're going to put up stats, and stats equal fantasy points. If you're a really good defensive player, you could put up good stats. You could just be a dominate the offensive line. You could be amazing at setting the edge on run and forcing the guy, the running back, back in the middle to have him tackled by another guy. You could be a shutdown corner that doesn't allow the quarterback ever to throw it your way because you always have him locked down. So there's the nice thing about middle linebackers is the really good ones also get stats. But things like nose tackles, cornerback, and also free safety. Those ball-hawking free safeties, Earl Thomas and, why is it slipping, McCourty off the Patriots, they are phenomenal players, but their point is to play center field, prevent the deep ball, influence the quarterback, prevent him from throwing the ball. So you don't get any fantasy points from there. You're a great player, but you want the guys that actually put stats into the box score.
Right. So, okay, and then another guy I picked was Benedrick McKinney. And after I read some rankings, they said he's only a two-down player. Is that true? And, like, is there any hope for me, or is my league, am I toast?
Man, you brought the right person on your podcast. I love Benedrick McKinney.
Oh, there we go.
He... You know, there was a lot of talk that he's not a three-down backer. If you look at the draft, Eric Kendricks, who was named the most complete linebacker, he's a little small, but he's rangy, and he's great in coverage. The Texans traded up when Kendricks, Paul Dawson, the only two off-ball linebackers that were selected were Shaq Thompson and Anthony. So Houston traded up to get Benedrick McKinney as a top, I think it was 43rd overall or 45th overall. You don't draft guys like that if you're going to take them off the field half the snaps. So, and another thing about McKinney is his coverage is a little lacking, but he can get to the passer. So I brought it up on Twitter, and I'm sticking to it. He is fantastic in the run game, stuff in the run. So you might get those tackles in first and second down, and in third down, they might unleash him blitzing off the edge. I don't know how they're going to do it, but that's one of those things where draft position does matter. You don't take a guy there and not play him. So I think it's a great pick. I don't know where you picked him, but I think I have him as my LB Rookie 3 behind Kendricks and Anthony.
Nice.
Interesting stuff. So another thing with IDP, a thing that I've seen a lot of people with about is how much systems matter and how much they can change year to year based on defensive coordinators, new head coach. When you're investing in IDP guys, how much does, like, coach stability or anything like that, how much does the system matter and, like, knowing that a player will be in a certain system for a long time?
Wow, that's a really good question. System matters a ton. Maybe not so much what coordinators are going to use their players, because they're going to use them to their strengths. So I don't think that really affects it much. It's the biggest thing is eligibility. So there's more and more teams going to the 3-4. The 3-4 is the devil in IDP. In the 4-3, you get two defensive tackles that both play 3 technique, so that means they're lined up on the guard. And you get two defensive tackles that are usually more productive, at the best, most productive defensive tackles. You go to the 3-4, you lose one of those tackles, or those tackles lose defensive tackle eligibility and play end, and then you have a nose tackle, so you have now one defensive tackle in IDP purposes that doesn't really rack up stats much. He's used to take on blocks. So that's why the 3-4 stinks on the line. Then you go to the linebackers, and instead of your high sack guys being defensive linemen, they're now linebackers. So in a big play league, they could still give you a ton of points, but so do Luke Kuechly, all those guys. And there's much more linebackers than defensive line. So system matters a ton, and the last thing you want to do is see your players go to a 3-4, because usually, unless they're a middle linebacker, it's going to affect them. A couple big ones this year were Buffalo. When Rex Ryan went to Buffalo...
I was going to ask you about Darius, because that is crushing, right?
So Rex Ryan went to Buffalo, and right when I saw it, I said, oh my God, he is going to just feast on offenses. Rex Ryan has never had the talent he has right now. He had Revis at one point, but he's never had these pass rushers. But the problem is, you're moving Jerry Hughes, who was a top, I think, 12 or 15 defensive end last year, and Mario Williams, who was a top 5 defensive end last year. They're both linebackers now. So you lose those guys in the defensive lineman pool. And then you lose Fowler to an injury, and Beasley might not automatically get defensive line eligibility. It's been a sad defensive line offseason. But not only do you lose that, but then Darius and Kevin Williams were two of they were one of the best combos at interior line. Well, now what looks like it's going to happen is Darius is going to play nose. Kyle Williams is going to play tack or end, so Kyle Williams is going to lose defensive tackle eligibility, which isn't that big of a deal in leagues that have defensive linemen. When you actually have defensive end and defensive tackle, it's a big deal. There's very few super productive defensive tackles, and both those Bills were the last couple years. As for Darius, he's still one of the best tackles in the league. He is phenomenal. But at nose tackle, I'd say he's more got like a capped sack ceiling of about 6, when previously he was flirting with Geno Atkins' 2013 numbers, 10 or 12. So it's definitely a hit to everyone around.
One of the big things here that has become apparent, sort of, you can get away with not knowing a lot about schemes and defensive or offensive formations in the offensive side of fantasy football. I feel like you need to know this stuff to accurately draft and sort of play IDP. So how would you go about learning about that type of stuff? And hello to our special guest.
Yeah, we have another special guest. So for IDP person, you brought up a great point. I know you do Devy stuff, and you don't need Devy stuff to play regular, but it helps you. You know who's coming next year. You know when to trade your first now for first next year. And the same thing with IDP. You don't need IDP to play, you know, regular offensive side fantasy, but it does help you. You have an edge. You know who's playing well. You know who's injured. You know which defensive schemes are changing and aren't as good against the run and things like that. So on your weekly matchups, you have that advantage. You know about that defense more than your opponent does. So it's definitely a good thing to do. As for IDP, to start doing it,
how do you figure out about the schemes and like what defenses, like who runs what, I guess?
The schemes or the sheens?
I don't know. We'll find out.
But I think a good thing to do is RotoWorld has really good depth charts. They have pretty much who's where and what kind of scheme they're running. You can always research. You can research defensive coordinators, see what they're running. But for the majority, if you look at our lads and RotoWorld and use both as a reference, you can tell what teams are doing what. And you can't really tell who's going to switch positions until that defensive coordinator. But guys like Rex Ryan runs a 3-4. The Seattle family defenses, the Dan Quinn, Gus Bradley, they run a 4-3 hybrid. But the nice thing is you get that D end. That's going to get a lot of sacks in that defense. So you really have to do a little bit of research. It's not too tough, but if you go to those two sites, you should be able to figure out who's running what and what players you want.
Cool.
All right, so let's get to some of these Twitter questions before we run out of time here. So we got a lot of, pretty much all of them directed towards Mr. Breezy. So the first one from our friend at Carp, he wants to know, why does Breeze hate Paul Warlow? Do you want to espouse your Paul Warlow hate?
Paul Warlow, I hate Paul Warlow for IDP, but I love the guy. He responded to me on Twitter last week or the week before when I was making fun of him. But the reason I don't like Paul Warlow is because he's not a good player. He's a special teams quality player, and he's just had a really good situation where that team has gotten run on and run on and run on, and he has just racked up tackles. He is not good. He is a below average in both the run and the pass, and Dan Quinn has had amazing linebackers, and I don't think he's going to accept putting someone out there that's not the best for the team. And they definitely did address the linebackers this year. There was a pretty small pool in free agency, but they did go out and get Justin Durant and Brooks Reed, and they paid them both decent linebacker money. And I'm saying, realistically, I think Warlow's a two-down backer now, which is going to give you Brandon Spikes numbers, which you don't really want unless in the deepest leagues. And my hot take me is saying he's going to be on waiver wires by, like, week six this year.
A hot take that I have no idea whether to agree with or not.
Yeah. So the next one is from our boy Patrick Sweeney. He said, Q, as a new general rankings when IDP scoring varies so drastically.
Yeah, that's a really good question. It's really hard to make rankings for IDP because there's so many scoring. So that's why when I put out my rankings on Dynasty League Football, I really took the time to put in a ton of comments and tiers and all that. So the big thing is in tackle heavy, which is going to be like three or less tackles equal sack, you're going to want those inside linebackers that just rack up tackles. And for linemen, the 3-4 defensive linemen will get an extra boost that play the run really well because you're less concerned about sacks and you're more concerned about just tackle numbers. So you really have to look at the type of player. The 4-3 ends that get double-digit sacks are going to get a boost in big play. Another type of player that might get a boost in big play are those safeties that really have a knack for getting their hands on the ball. Tayshawn Gibson's one of them. He has a lot of interceptions the last couple of years. And also some cornerbacks who intercept a lot of passes in big play. You might get a Richard Sherman. I'm not a big fan of using cornerbacks, but he does get a lot of interceptions. And also in big play, you can actually roster and use those 3-4 outside linebackers that are getting 10-plus sacks. In tackle heavy, you really just got to try to get as many inside linebackers and strong safeties that rack up tackles as much as possible. So I think rankings in general are can be used in a way that they're perfect, but they also could be the worst thing for people that use them as a strict Bible and you need to use them as guidelines. You need to adjust per your settings and on offensive rankings as well. And but the rankings that are out there are a pretty good reference.
All right, so we'll move on to the next question from fellow DLF writer. From fellow DLF writer, Big Board IDP, also known as Doug Green. Why does Breeze hate Kiko Alonso so much? Does Alonso owe him money or something?
Oh, man.
Is this the player haters ball right now? Were you a part of that? Is that what's going on here?
I do hate on a lot of players. I seldomly say go buy guys. I say avoid. But so Kiko Alonso, people are obsessed with him now, and really, he's not very good against the run. He's exceptional in coverage. I'm getting some weird images of Nathan right now through Hangouts, but he's exceptional in coverage, but in the run, last year he was playing in the Bills defense with those two tackles I was talking about who are just out of this world. He didn't have to fight off blockers. He's not very physical. He has speed and he uses that to his advantage and he excels in coverage, but he's really not some guy that's going to take on a block and beat that guard or beat that fullback and make the tackle. So I'm very concerned that the fit in Philly is just not right for him. It's a 3-4. They play a little bit of hybrid as well. But what I'm getting at is the most important thing is I think Michael Kendricks is a better player. I think he's a better player in the run. I think he's a better player blitzing. Maybe not in coverage, but for IDP, he's a better player. Then you look at how those scorings work. In the last 2 years, I wrote this down, Kendricks has 7 tackles a game. Kiko, his first year, he had about 10 tackles a game. That Buffalo scoring crew, they give out assisted tackles like free candy. And I just don't think that Kiko Alonso is going to come close to what he did in Buffalo. And also, just looking at Kendricks, he's missed a few games in his career, but I looked at his points per game, and everyone's got different scoring. But in the DLF IDP league, Kendricks was, the last 2 years, the LB13 and the LB23. And I think he's much better than Kiko. So you can read between the lines that I just don't think – some people have Kiko Alonso still as a top 10 dino linebacker, and I don't see him doing much better than linebacker 20 this year at best.
Interesting. So we got another question from another DLF writer live from his mother's basement. Carl Safchick asked, do you believe in taking high upside OLB with chance of scheme change in the future?
Ooh, that's an interesting question as well. I think that question is highly roster dependent. If you have a super deep bench and you can afford to roster a guy that you know you're not going to get use out of, yeah, it might not be a bad idea. You probably need it to be a more balanced or sack-heavy league. And also, not all players can play both positions. Give me a
second. It appears I have a visitor, too, which is a fly.
Oh, very nice.
Yeah. So as I was saying,
flies are always nice.
Sorry about that.
Mr. Frankie.
So as I was saying, not every player can play both positions. Maybe on Carl. So let's talk rookies. Maybe on Carl's Washington Redskins, Preston Smith might be able to play end. But somebody like Eli Harold, who got drafted on the Niners, he's going to be an outside linebacker. And if there was a scheme change, he wouldn't excel as a end anyways. So is it plausible to do this? Sure, if you're in a deep league. But I don't think it's a strategy that's going to hit very much. I know one guy that people were really hoping this would happen with was Brandon Graham last year off the Philadelphia Eagles. He was one of the better ranked PFF pass rushers. I think he was top five. He didn't get full snaps because they have two guys in front of him, Barwin and Trent Cole. But people were really hoping he'd go to a 4-3, and he re-signed with Philly, and now he's playing full-time outside linebacker. So there's people that held on to him for 2 years and could have picked up valuable waiver guys, and now they still have just a linebacker that will still put up points, but nothing special.
You know those times in life where, like, you know you don't know much about something, and when you start to learn, you just realize there's way more and just how little you actually know? That's what's happening right now. I'm getting more and more worried as the minutes go on. But
you just got to rewatch it and learn.
Yeah, yeah. That's the plan. But yeah.
All right, so we'll move on to our next question. It's from our friend Something About Football. I'm pretty sure his name's Chris Chung in real life. Anyways, first, I just want to shout out to he has put together a industry best ball league for charity. It's hashtag Help Allie Rowland. She apparently going through some tough times. You can read about her story if you just at Something About Football, and he'll let you know and give you all the information. But essentially, it's sites like DLF, RotoViz, UTH, and Football Guys are all giving away subs to winners of this best ball league. Just all you have to do is donate $10 to this GoFundMe page, and it's a good thing for charity, good thing for the industry. So just go check that out if you have the time. And then his actual IDP question is, why do mandatory CB leagues exist? Should they be sent to hell? That's my modified version of the question. And it looks like Eric has stepped away from the screen for a second, and now he's back.
Yeah, as for that question, first off, you said these sites are donating subs, like sandwiches, because that interests me.
See, we call them grinders in Western Mass. That's kind of a gross visual, but
yeah, I've heard it before. Okay, so let's get to the real question. I kind of agree with them. I'm not a huge fan of CB required leagues. They're very kicker-esque. You can just Most people, if you don't have one of the top two or three, like Guskowski in a kicker, you just stream guys. And it's very random, I think. But it is part of the game, and I can't really argue for it. So it's a bad question for me. I don't despise it as much as people say, but if I was to play in a league, I don't think I would do CB required. And if that doesn't make me as diehard as other people, that's fine.
Interesting stuff. So there's one last question we have, and it's name a couple of defensive end buy low candidates. This is from our friend Jason Blanton, the DLF podcast producer.
Oh, so defensive end, it's hard to get buy lows now because the talent pool is just getting so dry because of all these 3-4 defenses, and people are kind of scrambling for anyone that has defensive line eligibility. A couple guys. Our own DLF writer, Eric Coleman, opened my eyes to this guy, but he's a 3-4 end on the Broncos, Malik Jackson. He played really well last year. He should get a full-time gig this year with the new Wade Phillips scheme. He could give you top 20 linebacker numbers or defensive line numbers. Maybe not so many sacks, but definitely a mixture of sacks and tackles. Another 3-4 end I really like is Henry Anderson, the PFF stud that the Colts drafted just a few weeks ago.
Oh, okay. Yeah.
He they love him, and the Colts really don't have their defense was pretty is pretty terrible, and yeah. they need playmakers on that team, so he should be able to get snaps pretty soon. Some 4-3 guys that might get a little bit more sacks are I actually like both of the Tampa Bay Bucks defensive ends. George Johnson, who came from the Lions, and then Jaquise Smith, who played rotational last year with Adrian Claiborne, who's now gone, and he's in Atlanta. So both of these guys with like 50 to 70% of starting defensive end snaps each put up about 7 sacks. So if they're just as efficient, you could get, you know, double-digit sacks from either of these guys, and they do have very good tackles next to them that are taking a lot of the offensive line attention in Gerald McCoy, and they just signed Henry Melton, and Clinton McDonald also did really well. So those are a couple guys. That it's hard to buy low on guys when everyone's trying to do it.
Mm. All right, so before we wrap up, we're going to do a word from our sponsor, and then we got one more topic I want to cover with Eric. Reality Sports Online is a powerful fantasy sports platform where owners get to build and manage their fantasy team like an NFL general manager. RSO features the revolutionary free agency auction room, which mimics NFL free agency, enabling fantasy owners to compete against each other to negotiate with and sign the NFL's top talent to single or multi-year contracts. An intuitive algorithm acts as the player's agent, automatically valuing offers using the same factors used in real life. The total amount, per year average salary, total guarantee, and contract length. In addition to its revolutionary free agency software, RSO's League Manager has tons of other cool features like in-season signs and cuts, multi-team up to 5, and future draft pick trades, franchise tag, injured reserve, automated contract and salary cap functionality, and much, much more. Test your general manager skills today by participating in a free mock free agency auction at realitysportsonline.com. And use the code DUDES10, DUDEZ10, to get 10% off your league entry fee. Once again, that's DUDES, DUDEZ10, DUDES10. All right, so let's wrap this up. This is actually a pretty fun topic that, not necessarily IDP, but it was in the DLF IDP league. Eric, you recently joined that league, and you started with Odell Beckham Jr., who you just aren't his biggest fan. So tell our audience what you did with Odell Beckham Jr.
Okay, yeah. So I inherited a team, and it was a pretty good team. It had Beckham, it had A.J. Green, Randall Cobb, and it was a solid team. It just had very little depth behind those stud players. And I am not an OBJ fan, and I know he's one of the priciest, if not the priciest right now, players. So what I decided to do was, it was actually an idea made by Jules Dynasty on Twitter. He's also a writer now for DLF, to actually do like a silent auction for him. So what I did is I put a deadline of at this exact time I will accept the best offer in my inbox. And if your offer is pending approval, that means you have the top offer. If I reject your offer, that means there's someone that has a better offer, and you need to up your offer. And it was very stressful. Whoa. It was very stressful because
That's like stressful for you and stressful for the people that want him. Yeah, it's just all around stressful.
Especially, you know, you got to push accept, or if you don't, you lose all credibility, and you know that's not what it's about. So
It could be what it's about.
Yeah, but I ended up getting I actually accepted Carl's Safchek's trade, and I ended up getting the 1-1 A-Rob 2016 second and Janice for OBJ, and I ended up taking Cooper at the 1-1, and a lot of people said it was mixed on Twitter, but a lot of people kept saying OBJ not close, and while I get that people want OBJ. That is a lot of value for one player that's played 12 games.
What was the details of that again?
It was the 1-1. It was Nathan's favorite player in the world, A-Rob. It was a 2016 second, and Jeff Janis. So if you're looking at, you know, A-Rob's probably worth a mid-first, and then the 1-1's worth two mid-firsts. So you're looking at almost four firsts total for one player. So I think it was a very fair trade. There was another offer that came extremely close down to the wire, but I really wanted Cooper in this league to replace OBJ instead of a running back or Kevin White.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
How many teams look at it?
There's 12 teams in that league. The one thing is I joined, and the reason I joined is they needed someone to take over a team to start the rookie draft. So I only had a couple days before the rookie draft started. So I made it so the auction was over when the rookie draft started. Well, the draft started at like 10 a.m. on a Thursday. So I'm at work freaking out, having a heart attack with these offers coming in, trying to determine which one's better. Because once they got so close, you had to try to figure out, you know, you're arguing the 1-1 versus the 1-2, and there was four or five pieces on each side of the deal, and it was very stressful. So if you want to do it, it was a ton of fun, but make sure you have the end time at a time where you have 3 or 4 hours before it free, where you can just be chilling out, have your computer up, watching TV or something, because it's very stressful at the end.
Right.
All right, so any closing thoughts on IDP or Dynasty in general for us, Mr. Eric?
Well, can I real quick talk about Shane Vereen?
No.
Oh, yeah, go ahead.
Well, it was on the agenda. So I brought it up on Twitter in Voxer through random conversation that I think Vereen is kind of like Giovanni Bernard, and I kind of got shot down, and I really looked into it, and as bad as Vereen was last year, his usage, he played every game, but he ended up being, depending on what you're scoring, RB 20 to 21 overall. So in PPR. And in 2013, he was, the weird thing is you look on certain sites, one is they don't count week 16, they do count week 16. Regardless, in 2013, he played half the year because he broke his wrist, but he was an RB1 when he played. He was top 12, and he was used a ton in 2013. He almost had 9 targets a game. In 2014, he had about 4.6 targets per game. So if the Giants paid him good money for a running back. They paid him 3 years, $12.35 million. Andre Williams can't catch. Rashad Jennings can't stay healthy. And you have Odell Beckham taking all that coverage towards him. So if you split the difference, I think Shane Vereen is one of the best buy lows right now that could give you mid to low RB2 numbers with ease if he stays healthy. And his ADP right now at DLF is RB34.
I'm down with that.
Yeah, so I got some people wanted to hate on me. I'm still waiting for Shane Vereen to follow me on Twitter so we can bathe in his glory together.
Yeah, no, and I think going from the Patriots to the Giants historically have been a little better about fantasy distribution, you know? They usually go to their best guys in the whole Eli Manning era, so.
Until they're late to a meeting and Coughlin benches them.
Yeah, I guess, but.
can't be worse than Belichick, right?
Yeah. What was that?
I said can't be worse than Belichick benching guys. So, yeah. And the big thing is they really actively pursued Vereen. They got him at the beginning of free agency. So I don't think they really went out of their way to get a guy they're not going to use. I don't think he's going to light the world on fire. But in PPR, if you're getting 5 or 6 targets per game, high efficiency targets, you're going to catch all but one of those probably. So you're going to put 4 points just by receptions, add in the yardage, and you're looking at, like, if they use him like they're showing they pursued him, you're looking at, like, 10 points floor plus whatever on top. So is he going to take you to a fantasy championship? Probably not. His 2013 was probably definitely his ceiling. I don't see a running back getting 9 targets per game. But at RB34, he's just a flyer, and you're going to get close to, in my opinion, Gio Bernard levels. He's not as good as Gio Bernard, but I don't really care with running backs especially. I just want 2 to 3 years max out of, or if I'm lucky, out of a running back that's going to give me points.
Mm-hmm. Makes sense.
Alrighty. Well, Eric, we'd like to thank you for coming on tonight, and thank your daughter as well for appearing on the show. Always good to have them on the show. So let our fine viewers and listeners.
Contrary to NBA writers' beliefs.
yeah, that's funny. So let everyone know where they can find you, Eric.
You can find me on Twitter at BreezeIDP. Breeze is spelled like the wind, not the quarterback. So BreezeIDP. And you can also find my rankings and articles at DynastyLeagueFootball.com.
Alrighty, well, thanks for coming on tonight, or this afternoon, or whatever time we're filming this. And this is a nice and fun show, and learned about some IDP. I'm going to go join about 4 IDP leagues. So thanks for listening, guys, and I hope you enjoyed it.
Yeah, we will see you guys next time.
Thanks for having me.